minutes, then we will reach our goal for this half hour. So please call and do $20 a month for KBOO. When you think about how much KBOO gives back to you, I was thinking about this today. You know, maybe I give to some other nonprofits $20 a year, something like that. I give $20 a month to KBOO. And the reason that I give more to KBOO is because it is a resource that we all work together to create and to make happen. It's not like the other organizations out there. KBOO is a station that depends completely on our contributions as listeners. So if we can give, we all give $20 a month, that's what makes this station go. So can you give $20 a month? Think about it. It may seem like a lot, but when it comes right down to it, KBOO is absolutely worth it. 877-500-5266. Where would you be without this station? Where would you be without the station prepared to take a stand on your behalf here in your community?
Absolutely. And you know, your contribution to KBOO actually does support so many other groups in this movement as we work together to create radical social change and we create a new world together. You know, because where else can groups get a microphone? Where else can radical groups actually find a place to broaden public discourse? Where, I say, here at KBOO. That's why I've concentrated most of my attention on KBOO over the last many years. Occupy was a great a movement that coalesced and really did rely on people's media to help spread that message. You know, we have been a part of it. We will continue to be a part of spreading the people's message through all whatever movements coalesce and are to come. But right now, we need to hear from you so that, again, we can be strong enough to do that and take it on. 877-500-5266.
We are the megaphone of the masses, and we need your support. If we are able to keep this going, it's only because you call right now. 877-500-5266. If you're tired of being alienated, marginalized, when you heard that person on just a few minutes ago talking about needing a place for the voices of colonized people to decolonize, this is that place. Do it right now and support KBOO. It's so important, and we need your call. 877-500-5266. Thank you to Shannon in Southeast Portland, who gave online kboo.fm, another very easy way to set up your monthly contribution. $10 a month, $20 a month. Please do it now. With those, you also get a thank you gift. Call and you can find out much, much more. 877-500-5266.
This is that moment. We just have another few minutes to ask you to support this program, actually looking back and celebrating the 5th year anniversary from the Occupy movement.
Were you there? Maybe you were there and you want to remember.
I was there. You know, and that is the thing. That actually, our embedded part of the Occupy camp was such a joy as we were able to interview people and get these amazing ideas and philosophies out and cross-pollinating ideas. And then we also, when there was no one there to actually interview, we were an open mic and allowed anyone from the movement, anyone from the camp, to actually come up and use the people's microphone to, again, spread it whatever it was that they were passionate about, what piece of the puzzle they held. So right now we're asking you to support that microphone that supports so many ideas and controversial opinions and deep information. Right now is the time to pick up your phone and give. 877-500-5266. Solidarity is power.
Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the inescapable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being drug users. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when drug users are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized.
You know, I've always kind of said that, like, beer is a wonderful object in itself, but that's not necessarily why I look at it as a scholar. You know, we have this tendency to pay attention to the big things, right? Like the big events, the headliners, and we do need to pay attention to those things because they shape the world we live in. But I don't know that they're any more important than the ubiquitous things, the little things, like coffee and beer and weed and the things that you're going to be talking about on your show, right? Like, these things affect every aspect of American life, from legislation to, you know, income and spending to cultural meanings and childhood development. And, you know, it's okay, I would say. It's okay to take beer seriously. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's just fun. Why do you need to do that? But, like, why not, right? You're going to spend however many hours of your life on a stool in a bar somewhere. You might as well think about it.
That's J. Nicole Beckham. She's a cultural studies and communications professor at Randolph College and the author of Value of a Pint, a book on beer culture in America that's due out next year from University of Nebraska Press. More from her in a minute. Free Culture Radio is about drug culture. The theme for this edition is beer. Alcohol, after all, is a drug. That's a thing that our society really needs to get clear if we're going to have a rational, honest discussion about drug use and drug policies. Whether you use alcohol or not, you have to admit, beer has had a tremendous impact on American society. And it's Oktoberfest. So, on this edition of Free Culture Radio, we're going to talk about beer. We're going to talk about craft beer and the unbearable whiteness of brewing. We'll ask why Portlanders are so drawn to beer. But first, we're going to learn how to brew the stuff.
Jason Webb, and it's Portland U Brew and Pub, and also Unicorn Brewing Company, where we brew just custom beers. It starts with making a recipe, just like a chef has a recipe. And it's four ingredients, sometimes five. It's water, barley, hops, and yeast. And you formulate a recipe by starting with barley, and then you got hops and yeast on a recipe, and the water. And so every beer, say you're making one keg of beer, for example, like a half a barrel, 15 and a half gallon keg, maybe 21 pounds of what's called a base grain, because there's starches readily available, converted to sugar starches in the base grain, 21 pounds. And then to give you color, maybe if you're making a stout, use blackened barley, or caramelized barley. They're called specialty grains. And what they do, they kind of tumble and roast them, kind of like coffee in a way, and they caramelize it. And they caramelize these at different color levels. It's called Levibon. And that will make up just the color and flavor, just the beer part. And then the hops, there's over 50 strains of hops, and they all have different flavors also, just like the barley. And you get to pick and choose those because you get different flavors and aromas from all those different hops. And then, on top of that, you got yeast. There's all kinds of different yeast strains. So the water that you use, the barley, the base barley, the specialty grains of the barley, the hops and yeast all create unique flavors in a recipe. So that's what you start with. Then you have equipment. You have what's called a mash tun or lauter tun. Those guys there. And there's a screen on the bottom. It's called a false bottom. And it's got little slots in it, so after you run the barley through a barley mill, because you want to crack open the kernels of the barley, expose the starch and especially grains, the screen holds that crushed or milled barley. And what you do is you do something called mash in. You pour in 30 to 40 pounds of barley into the mash tun and with hot water inside it. And that's called strike water. The strike water is typically 160 to 170 degrees. And after you pour in 30 to 40 pounds of milled barley into that hot water, you lose about 8 to 12 degrees. You go for what's called a mash strike temperature, and it's a goal between 150 and 160, that window there. Under, I think, 146. It's not warm enough because you're trying to wake up the beta and amylase, the enzymes, the natural enzymes in the barley. You're waking them up, and they're converting those long chains of starches into sugars, but different types of sugars by mash temperature. 155 is in the middle. You're starting to create unfermentable sugars. And what that does is affects the body of the beer at the end of fermentation, because it's called attenuation. If you create complex sugars with different temperatures, higher mash temperatures, you leave, the yeast has a hard time fermenting it all the way out, and it adds body and maltiness. If you want a real dry, crisp beer, you create simple sugars at lower mash temperatures, say 148, 150. So what you're doing that. It takes about 45 minutes. There's pumps on mash tuns, and we pump what's called wort. Sweet wort is the liquid barley sugar that you created from the mash. So if you pump for 10 minutes on top of the mash on itself with these hoses here, the wort trickles to the husks of the barley, and it creates a natural filtration and adds clarification, because you don't want powders and chunks. Because what's going to happen after that is we pump the sweet clear wort now into the kettle, the steam jacketed kettle. And then, so the mash is all the sweet wort's getting pumped out of the mash into the kettle. You have to do something called sparging. Sparging is where you rinse all that sugar out of the mash with about 170 degree water, and that strips or rinses all the sugar out of the mash, and you get in the kettle. That takes a little over 30 minutes. Close the lid up, and you gotta wait till 212 degrees Fahrenheit, which is boil. Takes about 45 minutes after you get the kettle full. And then what we do is we boil the sugar for 60 to 90 minutes. The biggest reason is the bacteria. You wanna boil off the bacteria. But you're also able to add hops throughout that boil in different additions of the 60 to 90 minute boil. When you add hops in different additions, you get different effects from that hop. If you boil one hop at 60 minutes, the beginning of the boil, the whole 60, that's called a bittering addition. When you add hops 45 minutes remaining, or maybe 30 minutes remaining in the boil, that's called a flavor addition. And because when you add hops at the end of the boil, it's called noble or aroma hopping, you just get an aroma effect. But then, if you're making an IPA, there's something called dry hopping. And that's later when you add even more hops into fermentation. It's just like a steeping tea, or you get an aroma bomb. So we boil for 60, 90 minutes, kill all the bacteria, kind of caramelize the wort, condense it a little bit, add hops throughout the boil. And then we run it through this plate-looking thing. It's called a heat exchanger. And it chills it from 212 boiling down to 70 instantly. I mean, it flash chills it. And that's that way we could try clamp it or pump it into our sanitized fermenters. Then we add yeast, if the temperature's right. Ales ferment between 60 and 90 Fahrenheit, and lagers ferment between 40 and 60, around there. So if the temperature's right, we add yeast. And yeast is a fungus, and it's going to wake up in its new sugar environment 5-12 hours later, and it's going to start eating the sugars and fermenting. It creates carbon dioxide gas, CO2, and alcohol, and it creates heat. You have to control the temperature of fermentation, otherwise each yeast strain has a certain temperature range that you want to ferment it at. If you go too warm, if you let it ferment too warm, one, you can let it, it'll die, or two, it's going to give off nasty phenolics and esters that you don't want. They don't taste good. So controlling the temperature is crucial. Checking your sugar level with a hydrometer. And so it's pretty much 7 to 10 days, primary fermentation it's called, and it's moving along. Big foamy head on top, it's called a carousing. It's a yeast colony, it's going down, fermenting. Check the gravity with what's called a Zwickel port here. And if it's where, according to the recipe, you got original and final gravity, when it's ready, you cold crash it. Cold crash it with a product called propylene glycol. It's a food grade refrigerant.
Yeah.
And it runs through these insulated jackets in and out. Now, the reason why they're coned like that is because when yeast gets cold, it drops. And that way we can collect the yeast and actually harvest from the bottom and pitch into future batches. Then some breweries do different types of carbonation. Some breweries have a big tank, what's called a bright beer tank, where they'll force carb with a big, long stainless steel rod inside. Or what we do, these are 1.5 barrel conicals. We get 3 half-barrel, 3 full-size kegs. The beer is cold and flat, and then we do something called forced carbonation. We'll throw PSI, pounds per square inch of CO2 gas on the keg for a couple days, and then it's ready to serve.
Wow.
That was Jason Webb with Portland U-Brew and Unicorn Brewing Company. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back to the show in a moment. I want to take a minute to ask for your help. This is KBOO's Fall Pledge Drive. We're asking folks to become members of KBOO and show your support for community radio, for programming like this and the other fine public affairs and news programs that come to you each and every day. Give us a call right now at 877-500-5266 and make your pledge. There are volunteers ready to take your call. Or if you're online, go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. News reporters and public affairs programmers like me here at KBOO are volunteers. We give our time and expertise to the station because we believe in its values and its mission. For this show, for example, I mean, I've studied drugs, drug control policies, and the cultural milieu of drug use for more than 3 decades. And now I'm taking that knowledge and the professional and personal network I've developed and using it to create some content that I think you'll find informative and entertaining. There's a need for honest, factual, reality-based programs like this to discuss the impact of drugs on society. And the only place you're getting that programming on the airwaves here in Portland is here on KBOO Radio. Community radio that works for you. We're asking now for you to make that call and show your support. Call us at 877-500-5266 and make your pledge. Or go online to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. Thanks. Now, let's get back to the show. J. Nicole Beckham, Ph.D., is a communications and cultural studies professor at Randolph College in Lynchburg, Virginia. Professor Beckham studies and writes about, among other things, beer and beer culture. Tell me something about yourself.
I guess in relation to beer, I'm a passionate fan. I make beer. I drink beer. For a while, I judged beer. It really is kind of a leisure pursuit insofar as I would do it even if it weren't my object of study. It's one of those things where you spend enough time being passionate about something, you do, right? Like, see things that flummox you, or trouble you, or frustrate you, or interest you, and that definitely happened with me and my experience of beer, and particularly craft beer culture in the United States. It just raised so many questions that I was like, you know what? There's something going on here, and I need to look more closely.
And when you say you've judged, I was looking at your CV. You're certified as a professional judge. What? I should know that, but I really don't. How do you become certified?
Actually, anybody can do it. There's an organization called the Beer Judge Certification Program, the BJCP. They are one of the organizing bodies that is responsible for defining what are kind of sanctioned beer styles in the United States. So you essentially have to go through a kind of an examination process. There's a paper exam that you need to pass that is not terribly easy to be provisionally sanctioned as a BJCP judge. And then there is actually like a field test, a tasting test that you need to do. And then in order to stay active, you need to judge or steward, act as a steward for a certain number of sanctioned competitions every year. There's a point system, essentially. It's kind of like a continuing education system.
Wow, so it's more than just being a regular at a pub. You actually do. There is some paperwork involved.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it's a lot of fun.
To what extent would you say that American culture, the mainstream dominant American culture, has been shaped by beer?
I would say that it's difficult to overstate how tightly woven beer. The politics around beer, the way we value beer, the way we understand beer, the way we put it to work in our everyday lives has shaped the complexion of American culture. And that, honestly, that question, how deeply, to what extent, and to what ends kind of drives the work that I do.
Indeed. I was... I was reading your dissertation. It's quite good. How did you put it? Beer is inextricably a part of American everyday life, and as an object of study, it provides an intriguing point of entry to the everydayness of economic practices that has in many ways eluded contemporary discussions of American economics. How did it all start? I mean, is it from the English and the Germans? How did America get so hooked on beer?
There's a couple kind of ways to answer this question, but I think the easiest and perhaps the kind of easiest to follow is, you know, because Europe was hooked on beer. And we kind of imported it with European settlement. That's not to say that there weren't other kind of spontaneously fermented beer-like beverages to be found on the North American continent before European settlement, but the tradition that kind of defines American culture is largely European. But it's a different kind of contextual drinking than we do now. You have to understand that at the time, probably the beer that was most ubiquitous in households was on average lower alcohol. It was to some degree an issue of public health, particularly in Europe in the 15th, 16th, 17th centuries, where you started to get very large settlements of people with a poor understanding of sanitation practices. Water wasn't always the safest thing to drink. Beer, however, particularly a low alcohol beer, went through boiling, and so it was far more salubrious than lots of the waters that were available. It was often a part of the monastic tradition. So the church often made the beer for a settlement. And so it was in a lot of ways connected with, you know, the moral authority of a particular area. The word pub comes from public house, and that usually was attached to your church. So, you know, it came over with European settlement and very quickly, you know, establishing a beer making tradition in the United States was, you know, part of establishing American settlements. I think if you look at something like sales, beer, or just by volume production, beer does dominate other alcoholic beverages, but it's hard to say whether it dominates culturally in the way it would somewhere like Germany, right? We drink a lot of it, but it is largely still a very mass-produced product here that perhaps doesn't have some of the cultural resonance that it might in other places. But you can't make you can't argue against the volume of it we drink. We drink beer in volumes that have traditionally rivaled coffee and milk. So,
wow. The alcohol in American culture, it would be tough to disentangle. But there are the subcultures.
Yeah.
I mean, I live in Portland, Oregon. We have water that's comes out of the tap. Fairly, you know, very tasty and drinkable. A few problems with lead, but and we're in the middle of a hop growing region.
Mm-hmm.
So and Portland is one of the demographically one of the whitest cities in the United States. So is that why Portland is one of the centers of microbrew?
Ah, gosh, that's a good question. And hard to answer. I'm not sure whether the relationship is like just coincident, as in that the kind of demography of craft beer culture and Portland just sort of match up, and so it was kind of a, you know, a match made in heaven and flourished, or whether there was any sort of kind of causality going on. I mean, I think Portland would simply, it's simply well positioned to be a good craft beer town, given again, given its location in a major hop growing region. It's already, I mean, you mentioned coffee, but that really is a kind of aesthetic discernment, right? Like you've kind of got a consumer base there who's used to caring about comestibles, whether it's food or coffee, in a way that, you know, a lot of people who just like will throw some, you know, instant in a cup won't. You know, that's already sanctioned and culturally appropriate in a place like in Portland. So it's just a very, I would use my favorite adjective as a beer brewer. It's a very yeasty environment for something like craft beer.
Well, and in fact, you've actually looked at things like the farmers market, the green economy, and such, and how does that interrelate with the craft beer movement?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really related. A chapter I published in a collection just called "Of Food in Everyday Life" from Lexington Press. I wrote an article there about sustainable brewing because, for a number of reasons that are kind of complex to trace out, you know, craft brewers have been some of the most enthusiastic to kind of take up the rhetoric, but also some of the practices of sustainable business. You know, I think they have an ethos that points to the local already. They have a certain level of pride in small-scale production and responsible production. If you go to, you know, the Brewers Association and look at their definition of craft, there is a piece in there that craft brewers generally have a kind of altruism or relationship of respect to the communities in which they're embedded. And I think that whole kind of piece of the craft beer movement fits together really well with some of the things that are going on with our green economies and sustainability. But you know, I think both of them also, right, have unintended consequences or exclude certain folks with perhaps not meaning to. Both are things that are far more attainable for those with economic means and higher educational attainment. So there's a lot of parallels between the two things. Folks who are interested in hearing about any of this stuff can just look at my website, jnicolebeckham.com. That's JNICOLBECKHAM.com. And same thing, J. Nicole Beckham is my Twitter handle. I tweet about beer and other random things. So if you want to get at me, get at me.
That's it for this edition of Free Culture Radio. I want to thank my guest, Professor J. Nicole Beckham from Randolph College, for talking to us about beer culture. Special thanks to Jason Webb of Portland U-Brew and Unicorn Brewing for teaching us about beer making. And my thanks to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. The show has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/KBOO Free Culture Radio. Please give it a like. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.
You're listening to Free Culture Radio here on KBOO, and we are in the last stretch of our fall membership drive. If you've been holding out, you've been waiting, sitting on the sidelines, waiting for that moment to call, now is the moment to call. Do support Free Culture Radio, this show that is fairly new. It was created by Doug McVeigh, trained right here in our studios, and is producing his own show now. Please call and support the community radio training that goes on here at KBOO. 877-500-5266. We want yours to be the next name that we say thank you to. If you've been sitting there wondering, you know, what is going on? Why does the station keep asking us to donate and to support? Well, this is the way the station is funded. We come to you just three times a year asking for your support, and that is how this station maintains its financial stability. Please call and give $20 a month, $10 a month, if that's possible for you. Do it. It's very easy to set up.
It is. It just takes a couple minutes of your time, and it is tangible action that you can take to support your community right now this afternoon, supporting Free Culture Radio, supporting all of the news and public affairs here on KBOO, supporting all of the music, too. You know, we are an organization. There we are. We are an organization that actually has written our values into our program charter. Values of peace, justice, democracy,
human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism,
freedom of expression, and social change.
Oh,
yeah. I've never had anyone recite that See? With me before. Nice, Jenka.
We know our values and we live our values.
That's
and
it, day in and day out.
If you're someone also that believes in living your values, we ask you to pick your phone up, pull it out of your pocket, and call right now, 877-500-KABOO. If you need to maybe pull over, maybe you're riding your bike, listening with the earbud in on one ear, just one, stay safe, pull over, and pull out your phone, 877-500-KBOO. We want to offer you a one-year subscription to Yes Magazine if you give $5 a month. And we also want to offer you, if you can give a $90 minimum contribution, then you can get the book, Rat Bleeped, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy. We have copies of that if you heard it this morning. If you missed it this morning, you can still listen online. Our website is new and improved thanks to our listener contributions. You know, maybe even waiting for a personal invitation. You know, I know you're listening, Joe in Portland, Muhammad and Tiger, to Sheila, Tanya, Ann, you.
It's
call.
It's like your Miss Pat with the magic mirror, you know, on Romper Room where she can see everyone.
I know that you're listening and you've been waiting, even holding out. You're just like, oh, I've got restraint. I can wait till the end of this membership. No, don't wait. Now is the time to give. It's very important that you do give because this is how this station is sustained. You don't have to worry about your membership being spent in some, highfalutin place out in the, you know, we're not building a high rise or something like that. We're just a
check us out
grassroots station. Yeah, come on down.
Yeah, that's right. You know, 20 Southeast 8th is where we are. And, you know, we have volunteers starting out new every month learning how to make radio happen. We have people, well, like yourself from the community who have some time to spend actually passionately sharing the information that they have, connecting our listeners together into amazing movements. And, well, it's all kind of a labor of love. And if you don't have that kind of time, right now, just pick up your phone. You can still support this effort. 877-500-5266. Go ahead, support community radio right now. Again, that number, 877-500-5266.
The time now is 7 p.m. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. We have some community event announcements, and then we're going to get on to the program.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Hemp Stock 2016.